Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
And now we're talking about breast cancer with GP Dr. Maura Finn. Maura, good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
So let's start with the incidence rates, because I think people are always a bit taken aback when they hear that 1 in 9 women will experience breast cancer at some stage.
Yeah, and some figures would even suggest it's a little higher. However, the vast majority of those cases are women over 50. The incidence does increase as you get older. And what I'd really like to stress is that the survival rates for breast cancer are improving enormously all the time. Like the 5 and 10 year survival rates are like 85% or higher. So it is a scary topic. It frightens people and people need to be vigilant. But however, it is really good to know that if you catch breast cancer, or any cancer for that matter, early, your survival rate, even though the treatments are very difficult, but the survival rate is very good.
Okay, so,
I suppose vigilance is key, isn't it?
When we talk about that in a moment, but before we even get to that point, talking about the risk factors which lead us to prevention might be really useful. What are the risk factors, Maura?
Okay, well, most people will be aware of the idea that a family history of breast cancer is a risk factor, and it is. However, the number of genetic cancers that are diagnosed are only around 5 to 10%. So the majority of risk factors we call them multifactorial, because we don't fully know why people develop cancer of any sort, and breast cancer in particular. But there are some things that we do know have an absolutely increased risk of breast cancer, cause an increased risk. Obesity is one of them. So high BMI over a sustained period of time will increase your risk of breast cancer. Poor exercise and diet will increase your risk. And even a minimal amount of alcohol intake has a very high is associated with a very high increased risk of breast cancer. So these are things people don't often think about. They'll be very much focused on hormones and family history, but lifestyle measures really make a big difference if you're trying to minimise your risk of breast cancer.
That's why when you see those kitchen ornaments that say, oh, it's wine o'clock, you know, we just don't realise what we're doing if we're sipping on the wine every day.
Exactly, and it's been normalised so much, and particularly for women, that you would have a glass of wine in the evening. But if we drink anything above or even at the daily recommended limits or weekly recommended limits, that does increase your risk of breast cancer. So it's important to stress that fact.
Absolutely. And so then you spoke about being vigilant. And what are the warning signs then, Maura?
Okay, well, obviously, one of the things is all women should, once they get to a certain age, beyond their early teenage years, they should get into the habit of checking their breasts once a month. And checking them after their period is the best time, because before your period, you know, they're sore and lumpy and kind of a bit irregular anyway. So after your period, check them, look at them in the mirror, move your arms, cut them, put them above your head and onto your hips and have a little look. Then check them with the pads of your fingers, not your fingertips, and feel around. And the whole idea of that is to actually know what's normal for you. So your normal breast tissue. And then if something is new or different, you will identify it fairly quickly. The things that we are always concerned about are new lumps, skin changes, any change in the skin, the look of the skin, if the skin is puckered or pulled in, or if it changes its texture, a nipple discharge, nipple blood from the nipple, or even a nipple that's inverted, which some people are born with inverted nipples and it's always like that. But if it's a new thing, we always need to see it. Pain in the breast, swelling in the breast, and under the arms as well. That's, you know, if you have lymph nodes that are swelling, they will be uncomfortable too. So, but it's really down to understanding what's normal for you. And the bigger your breasts are, the more difficult it is. So if you need to go to a doctor to have your breasts examined ever so often to give you some reassurance, that's a really, really good idea.
Now, I have a listener here who just on this topic has been in touch to say that she has noticed one of her nipples inverting. It will come back out to its form easily, but continues to fall in. I hadn't even realised this is a symptom of breast cancer until recent media coverage. I went to my GP last week. He's referred me, but I'm waiting for an appointment. Everything I Google gives a red flag for nipple change. Just like this, while I have no other symptoms that I'm aware of, I am beyond worried. I have 4 small children. I keep panicking when I get my appointment, that when I get my appointment, I will be told I have weeks to live. I know you'll have no answers for me, but even some discussion around nipple change and its link to breast cancer might help me.
That's really distressing for her. And look, at any woman who's been referred to a breast clinic, be it with a lump or anything new, until you have had your been seen and gone through the examination process and the diagnostic process, you're worried. Of course you are. You're worried that you have breast cancer until it's proven otherwise. However, nipple changes can come from other reasons too. There's a thing called ductectasia, where the ducts are actually kind of just get a bit swollen and inflamed. She's had four children. She probably has breastfed. There may be issues with her nipples as a result of that. So obviously vigilance is key. She needs to be seen. She needs to have the full examination, mammogram, ultrasound, and possibly even a biopsy. But fingers crossed that it actually will be something quite innocent. But it's better to check, even mm-hmm. though that amount of psychological torture she's in right now yeah. is very difficult.
It's very difficult. What's your experience of the waiting times, more if you're referring somebody for to be further assessed?
Well, actually, before COVID, they were exceptionally good, and we could actually really be sure that, you know, if it was an urgent referral, as far as we saw it, or if it met the criteria for an urgent referral, they'd be seen within 2 weeks, which was exceptionally good, and 6 weeks then if it was something that wasn't as urgent. However, COVID has kind of changed so many things, and I've personally seen a big delay in clinic appointments, and it's a shame because it was one of the really good, very well-run clinic systems. I hope it'll kind of pick up again. I can understand why things were a little bit delayed, but the distress it causes women is just extraordinary. And then some women will ask, can I go for a mammogram? But a mammogram isn't enough if you're a younger woman by itself. You need to have what's called a triple assessment. You need to have the examination with an expert, you need to have a mammogram, and you need to have an ultrasound, and then possibly a biopsy. So the breast clinics are definitely the best way to go.
And for
but
women
I presume
between,
they're doing their best to get on track again.
Well, we'd hope, certainly. Women between the ages of 50 and 69 then will be called by Breast Check for screening.
Yeah, now that's for healthy women who do not know that they or think that they have any problem yeah. with their breast. And that's really important to say. So, you know, you never wait for your breast screening if you think that there's something that's different or new. You always go to your GP and we refer you accordingly. So the screening process is a different thing. Screening is always looking for almost incidental cancers in people who are healthy and don't know they have a problem. And then if it's picked up very, very early, it can be treated very early and successfully. So it's very important that people know that. It's the same as with cervical screening. You know, screening, again, it's for healthy women. If somebody has PV bleeding or something like that, they need to come to the doctor. You don't wait for your screening assessment.
So let's talk then more about treatment. If you're diagnosed with breast cancer, does that always mean surgery?
No, not always, but most often. So if there is a lump as such, you know, obviously this is a cancerous lump, there's tumours there, you always are afraid that they may spread. So the most important thing is to get rid of the lump, get rid of the cancerous cells. So that's what you would try and do. It may be followed up with radiation treatment. That's very, very common. Sometimes, depending on the size of the lump or the tumour, the radiation or chemotherapy, if it's needed, is before the surgery. So there's no one size fits all with this. It's very personalised treatment, even to the extent that women have what's called an oncotype sample sent, usually off to the States, where they have their genes tested to see how well they would respond to chemotherapy and whether or not they were more likely to develop metastatic disease, as in spread of cancer in the future. So it's very personalised. It's personalised into the extent of that particular tumour, but also their genes and how the woman will deal with it. So it's really important to know that if you have, or you're in this journey of breast cancer, that there is not one size fits all, and your friend who may be experiencing breast cancer might have a very, very different course of treatment to you.
And hormone therapy then is sometimes used or always used?
Yeah, no, sometimes used, because it's a little complicated, but the tumour cells in breast cancer and most other cancers, but they have receptors on them which will be fed by certain things. So if the tumour cell has a receptor that's fed by oestrogen, or it has a cell that's fed by progesterone, or there's another one called HER. So if that tumour is fed by these particular hormones, what we do is we block the hormones. Now, your tumour may not have those receptors on it, and if it doesn't, those hormonal treatments won't be of any value to you. So it really depends on how How your particular tumour cells behave and how they react to other proteins in the body.
All right, let's get to some more of our listener questions now. So this one, Dr. Moore, due to nipple bleeds and indented breast, I got a small mass of cells removed last year. It turned out to be non-cancerous, thankfully. But does this mean I'm more prone to developing breast cancer? Whenever the breast is tender, I'm on high alert. I'm a mom to four young kids, another mother of four, so I need to be around.
Okay. That could be very similar to that other lady we were talking about. Then it may be that she obviously would have had ductectasia, which is where she had, her nipple was pulled in and inverted and crusty, but it wasn't cancer. Now, that is a standalone condition and it doesn't increase her risk of breast cancer. However, she needs to be as vigilant as anybody else. And obviously she's worried now, she's on high alert. And I hear that. That's no harm. Go in, check with your GP, have yourself reviewed. I mean, I never consider it hypochondria if you're actually very concerned about something and you can't sleep and you're really worried. It's far better to check it mm-hmm. and kind of get that extra reassurance than it is to be at home and thinking. In the dead of night, we always think every lump we have is cancer. We never think it's something innocent. So she should let herself be reassured accordingly. And over time, she'll become more and more as comfortable with the condition, I would hope.
Well, Fran had pre-cancer 6 years ago and has had a yearly mammogram since, but because of the backlog due to COVID, she's no date for this year's appointment. And she wants to know, would it be better for her to go private or wait till that appointment comes up?
Okay, well, if she's in a breast clinic, it is always a superior service in ways in that it's like it's free, it's the public service, it has all the facilities involved with it. It has, you will have support nurses, you'll have psychological backup. And the breast clinics are exceptional. They're really well run and very often are involved in clinical trials. So the public system is the best system. However, we do, as a GP, we often opt for a private care because we're waiting and the concern of the women while they're waiting is building up. Now, what I would do in that situation, I would go to a private breast consultant as opposed to just go for a standalone mammogram because, as I said, in most cases, especially even women who are postmenopausal, if they have dense breasts, mammogram by itself is not sufficient. So it's something that should be discussed with the GP. And yes, there's, you know, we find a way. It's always about getting people seen and assessed in a timely fashion.
Okay, good one from a listener here. If breast check ends at 69, does that mean women 70 and over are at a much lower risk?
Yes, they are at a lower risk. Even though they can develop breast cancer, it tends to be far less aggressive. And the reason breast check ends then is because even though there can be breast cancers that develop, the screening programs are a bit complicated, but it's all about whether or not the number of cancers you catch will be worth kind of trying to go for treatment, because some women over the age of 70 will have breast cancer that's not very aggressive, may have just a little bit of surgery and won't need any further treatment for it. Mm. So it doesn't mean you shouldn't be vigilant. And in fact, over 70, it can be very easy to examine your breasts and lumps can be seen very quickly. So you're not in the screening program, but you still need to be aware and come and if you don't want to check your breasts yourself, because some women don't feel comfortable with it, when you're coming in for your blood pressure or whatever it is, we'll check them. And that's a very good way to kind of stay on top of that.
Okay, Stephen has been in touch to say he was one of the 1% of all diagnosed breast cancers in men in 2009, and he's still happily enjoying life. But he advises that a quick check, men should do a quick check in the shower too.
Yeah, absolutely. They should. I mean, obviously, all the information is targeted towards women, but there are incidents, and particularly for those people who have a family incidence of a genetic predisposition to any cancer, but particularly the BRCA genes, which people will know about. So they would if you have a BRCA gene positive in your family, you may be more likely to develop breast cancer as a man. So yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. In the shower for men is probably very easy. In for women, lying down is probably better, because especially if your breasts are a little bit looser, if you're a little bit older, they tend to flop a small bit. So you need to be able to kind of feel them properly.
On that, we have a couple of people in touch with us who are pregnant and or breastfeeding. And they're asking, should you be checking for lumps at that stage, or are lumps a normal side effect of pregnancy and breastfeeding?
They are, absolutely. Okay. So it's a tricky time. And unfortunately, women can be diagnosed with breast cancer during pregnancy or when breastfeeding, but it's a very, very difficult time to actually assess properly. And mammograms then involve radiation. You know, it's not something that you would do during pregnancy that easily. So usually, I must say, if somebody's pregnant and they have something, I'd examine. But unless you're concerned, reassurance would be the key there. Breastfeeding, thankfully, because you're not cycling while you're breastfeeding, as in your normal hormonal cycle, it is slightly protective for breast cancer as well. So it's always another reason why breastfeeding is a better option. But when you're breastfeeding, you'll have lumps all the time because your ducts will be slightly blocked, or you'll have maybe even mastitis. So it's very tricky. It's very hard to kind of figure out if it's something acute or if it's something more sinister.
Okay, and a final one. This may be one which would be more appropriate for a cancer consultant to answer, but I'll try you anyway, more on it.
Thanks.
Please tell me, what is the up-to-date advice as to how long a patient should continue to take tamoxifen post-radiotherapy? Is it 5 or 10 years?
Well, it depends. Tamoxifen blocks estrogen, and it can be used from in premenopausal and postmenopausal women. Usually, it depends on the age of the person who was diagnosed. You're usually trying to give hormone treatment for 10 years. But if that lady was near menopause by the time when she was diagnosed, she might have 5 years of tamoxifen and then possibly be changed over to a different type of hormone treatment called an aromatase inhibitor, like an estradiol. There's a few of them out there. And that might be for another 5 years. So generally, you would say 10 years of treatment for younger women, and maybe a change from tamoxifen to something else. They're tricky treatments. They cause lots of side effects. So they actually, it is something that can be, it's not as easy to say stay on this for 10 years and put up with it. They can actually be quite difficult to take. Okay. So it's something that we're constantly monitoring.
And who would make that call? Is that the GP or the consultant?
Usually the consultant, but there's occasions where you talk to the consultants and say, listen, this woman really can't tolerate this. But then there's other versions of drugs as well that might be more appropriate. But it all really depends, again, on the type of tumour. If it was back to what I was saying about receptive positive or not, and if that person has BRCA gene positive, if it's a second cancer, if it's a metastatic disease, all of those things are involved in the decision-making process.
We have a few people getting in touch with us saying that they're on some of these medications as part of their treatment and they are finding it really difficult. So in those instances, you shouldn't really put up with that. You should go and have a chat about it, would you say?
Well, it's all about trying to reduce your risk of recurrence. So anastrozole, for instance, it blocks estrogen that is when you're postmenopausal, and it's so you have less estrogen in your body anyway, but there are pockets, there's parts of your body that make a little hormones that can be converted to estrogen. So it blocks that. So it has all those kind of menopausal effects, as does tamoxifen. Mm-hmm. Always talk. We're always trying to find and tailor treatments to you personally. And sometimes the side effects that you might feel you're having may not be related to the treatment so much as something else. So again, there's always ways that we will try and kind of modify. It's about keeping you living your best life and trying to live your longest life possible too.
Keep that cancer at bay. I just have a 7-year-old woman who's on that drug, and she says, I can feel the estrogen leaving my body, my bones ache, my skin is dry, I have brain fog, and there are a myriad of other issues happening as well. And she was looking for some advice on minimising the side effects.
That's really difficult, because obviously she cannot, if she's on a hormone blocking treatment, she can't be on hormone treatment to improve those effects like HRT. At 70, she wouldn't have had a huge amount of circulating estrogen possibly anyway. So maybe some of her symptoms are related to the medication, but some of them are related to other issues. And one thing we usually do see, especially with somebody who's older, is that they come to tolerate it quite quickly. So over a period of about 3 to 6 months, you tolerate those side effects. However, if she's really struggling, she talks to her GP, who may do something if possible, or maybe even refer to or talk to the consultant and see if there's some other approach that can be taken.
Maura, a huge amount of really useful information there. Thank you so much for that.
That's not at all. Thank you.
GP Dr. Maura Finn there. And thank you too for all of your questions today.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.